Good morning and welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we're going to be learning Yechezkel Perek Lamed Zayin, the 37th chapter of Sefer Yechezkel, and this is an incredibly famous Perek. It actually contains two separate Haftarahs. It contains the Haftarah for Shabbos Chol HaMoed Pesach in the first section, and in the second section is the Haftarah for Parshas Vayigash. And these are, as we learn them, we will obviously recognize the symbolism, we'll recognize the stories that are being told over here, an incredibly famous point in terms of the future and the ultimate resurrection and consolation that Hashem talks about in the future. The first section of this parak, which runs from Pasuk Aleph to Yud Dalad, is in fact the vision of the Valley of Dry Bones. This is extremely famous. This is the Haftarah for Parashas, with the Shabbos Chol HaMoed Pesach, and in this vision, Yechezkel is taken out into a valley. Vaynicheu betoich habika, vayvehi mele'er atzamois, and it was full of bones. And Hashem turns to him and says, "Do you know what these dry bones are?" And very prudently, Yechezkel turns to Hashem and says, "Hashem Elokim, atoyodata, you know, I don't know what you're trying to tell me about these." So Hashem then says, "Yechezkel, hinovei el ha'atzamois la'ele, you are to prophesize to these bones." And they are told to listen to the mouth of Hashem, to the words of Hashem, and I'm going to bring a ruach. Hinei ani mevila vachem ruach v'chisem, and you're going to live. I'm going to place sinews over you. I'm going to recreate skin and flesh, and you're going to live and know that I'm Hashem. It's almost as if the dry bones are the audience of this prophecy, and that's in fact what happens. As he says this, then there's a loud noise. But tekrivu atzmois etzel el atzmoi. It's just worthwhile learning this in the psukim just to see the magnificent. The poetry, the wording, the understanding of how this is actually going, and bone is going to connect with bone. V'ro'isi v'inei aleihem gidim u'basar aleh, and there's going to then the sinews are going to attach, and then the flesh, the muscles are going to cover it. V'yikrom aleh or, and then skin is going to cover the muscles. But there's no life. They're still lifeless corpses. Then for a second time, Hashem says, "Speak to the ruach," and so and that's what happens. And the wind comes from all four directions, and ufechi baharugim ho'ele v'yichyu, and breathe into these killed people, and they will live. And that's exactly what happens. And they stand up. And we're told that it's a chayil gadol me'od me'od. It is an army, a vast, vast army of people. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu then says the interpretation is, this is all base Israel. This is these people are the nation of Israel. They are saying, Hinei omrim yovshu atzmoiseinu v'avdot tikfoseinu. They say that we've lost our hope, our bones are dried out. So HaKadosh says, I'm going to open up your graves, Klal Yisrael. And I'm going to take you out of your graves, and you're going to live. I'm going to put life back into you, and you will know Ki ani Hashem dibarti v'asisi, that I am Hashem who spoke and did. So just a lot of things to focus on in this particular vision. First of all, is did this actually occur or not? Is this something Yechezkel saw in a dream, and is supposed to represent something, or it actually occurred? This happens to be a matter of debate, and the place to look at this is Sanhedrin, Daf Tzadi Beis and Beis, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which discusses this particular episode in great detail. The Gemara suggests two Tanatic opinions who discuss whether in fact it did exist or not. Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion that in fact it did occur, and Rabbi Nechemiah is of the opinion that it says that it is a mashalhu. It is a mashal ahayo. It was a parable. It was meant to convey a particular message, but didn't necessarily happen. It is worth noting that up till now, it sounds like what most of the things Yechezkel has done are actually physically being done. Meaning, all the demonstrating prophecies he's done have been physically demonstrable. So, we have seen what he's done. Just worthwhile thinking about when it comes to this. Now, let's move on. So the Gemara asks two very basic questions about this episode. Number one is, who were these people? Not so much how did it happen, but who were these people? Because the Pesukim describe them as harugim. These are the ufechi baharugim ha'ele in Pasuk Yates. So breathe into these killed people. So who is killed? What's going on over here? So the Gemara actually presents four options as to what it is. Again, we're in Sanhedrin, Tzadi Beis and Beis. The Gemara quotes the name of Rav. Now, these are the B'nai Ephraim. In Egypt, there were a group of people who actually escaped the land of Egypt to make a run attempt to try to get into the land of Canaan, like the prophecies of Yaakov, like the prophecies of Avram and the Bris Ben Abisarim. And so the B'nai Ephraim wanted to speed along the Cates, the end, and they dashed out, and they, in fact, were killed in this valley. Their entire army was lost earlier than Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's option number one. Option number two, Shmuel says, these are people who denied Tchias HaMeisen. They denied the resurrection of the dead, and they are being resurrected. Rabbi Yirmiyah Bar Abba would say that these are the people who are so dry, they lived such dry lives, they had not even they didn't even have any residue of mitzvahs in their life, completely devoid of any spirituality. That's why their bones are described as dry. And finally, Rav Yitzhak Nafcho would say, these are the people, if you go back to Perek Ches in Yechezkel, where it describes that he sees the temple, the Migdash from above, and the people who had inscribed Avodah Zorah on the walls of the temple, it was these people who did it who are being resurrected. So just to try to pull a common thread through these, generally the understanding is, and the Maharal in his explanation of the Agoras on Shas explains that the common denominator of all these four cases is people who have given up hope of life. These are people who feel that there's not going to be Tichias HaMeisim. They're serving Avodah Zorah in the base of the Mikdash. They don't have any mitzvahs with them. And even the B'nai Ephraim, who it sounds like have a lot of hope, well, actually, their action is really an action of complete lack of hope. They felt that there was no way they were going to get out of Mitzrayim. So last-ditch suicide mission, let's go and attack and try to get into Israel. These are all people who completely deny that HaKadosh Baruch Hu still has a plan. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses them as the platform of this miracle. In a certain sense, they're being proven wrong, but they're not really the audience, actually, then. They're actually just the tool to the real audience, which is the generation that Yechezkel is speaking to, who feel like they have lost their hope. And what the generation is seeing now is the people who are clearly the furthest gone, who had no reason to expect that they'd be resurrected, were resurrected, so you too can also. That seems to be the mechanism of this prophecy. Let's understand one step further. Actually, there's an interesting historical tidbit, and that is that Naftali Hertz Imber uses these specific words as the basis of the song which became the national anthem of Israel. Is in the second stanza, Oid loy avda tikvosenu. When we say Oid loy avda tikvotenu, where does that come from? That comes from this parak where these bones say we did lose our hope. He is transforming that claim, Yoshua Atzmosenu V'Avda Tikvosenu. He is saying, no, that's what Yechezkel is saying, it's never too late to regain hope. What happened to these individuals after they died? After they were resurrected, what happened to them, is the Gemara asks. The Gemara brings a number of opinions. One opinion is that they got up and they sang Shira, and then they dropped down dead again, meaning so they were here for a particular purpose, and after that purpose was fulfilled, they'd proven the point, they'd sang Shira to Hashem, they dropped down dead, and there's a certain balance in matter, there's a balance in life, nobody's going to get a free second ticket. Whereas there's another opinion, which is recorded in the Gemara, and that opinion says, no, they went to Israel, and they married, and they settled down, they had children, and in fact, one of the Amoraim says that, no, I am one of the children of them, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, let's get the exact name over here, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseiro Omar al Raglova, he got up and says, "Ani mi bnei bneihem v'halalu tefillin sheiniach li abba abo behem." I'm a grandchild of one of these individuals, and these are the tefillin my grandfather gave to bequeath to me. Which means he's saying it really happened. Rabbi Beryl Wan once commented that, you know, when one looks at a generation that went through the valley of death and were basically bones by the end of it, the generation of the Holocaust, he points out that there were different groups of people. There were people who got up, stood Shira, and then they essentially disappeared again. They didn't leave necessarily anything behind them. There's no blame. There's no condoning or judging at all. But at the same time, there were some people who got up and lived a life, but they never were able to translate it into another generation. There were other people who got up and they reconstructed their lives and they had children and grandchildren. They gave over their spiritual yearnings to their grandchildren. Very different patterns we see in a generation which also were almost resurrected from dead, those who survived. One last point on this particular episode is that the Talalei Chaim Rav Chaim Cohen offers a very fascinating point in his sefer called Hakitzu Verananu in the first chapter, that Galus is seen as separateness, as where the body of Israel has been broken down and there's nothing holding it together, all there is separate bones. I mean to say separate communities which have their own customs and do things their own way. And what real geula is when those bones can come together once again, and it's no longer just separate institutions and it becomes an entity. And it's not just an entity, but it'd be the language of community, the language of nationhood is revived again, which is something we're witnessing in today's day and age. The second and last part of this chapter is the Haftarah Vayigash, which runs from Sukkim Tesvov onwards to the end of the Perek. And this is about the unity of Klal Yisrael, where Hashem tells Yechezkel to take two pieces of wood and write on one of them Yehuda and the other one Yisrael Chaveroi. And the one is going to be Yosef, the Eitz Ephraim, and the other one is the wood of Yehuda. And he's supposed to korav osam echad el echad le'elecha le'eitz echad v'yulachadim v'yodecha. You take these two units and you put them together, and they're going to be one. They're going to be one unit in your hand. And when people ask what this is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm tell them, Hinei ani lakech es beis Yisrael miben hagoyim asher holchu sham v'kibatzti osam misaviv. I'm going to take Israel out of all their places, and I'm going to make them into one nation. Ve'eseh osam l'goy echad ba'aretz barei Yisrael, u'melech echad yulu kulam l'melech, v'lo yiyu od l'shnei goyim, v'lo yechatsu od l'shtei mamlachos. Oh, they're no longer going to be separate entities. And David is going to lead them, and they're going to follow our laws. And tellingly, at the very end of the parak, he says, I'm going to give my mikdash among them, u'mishkani v'yo mishkani aleihem. And my mishkan will be there. But of course, the terms mikdash and mishkan should be blatantly obvious why he's saying both terms, because Shiloh in Ephraim in the north was where the Mishkan lived and the Mikdash was in the south. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is using both terms. There'll be one spiritual center for all of Klal Yisrael. Just a few things to think about in this last section very briefly. And the flow over here is that, as the Malbim points out, is that once there has been a reconstitution of the resurrection of the dead of Klal Yisrael, then how does that body operate? How does that one entity operate? And that's why we talk about unity internally after we've had resurrection. How is it achieved? The Radak entertains a few possibilities. The Mefarshim debate whether this is a superficial or intrinsic connection which is happening. Is that we're gluing, holding the woods together, and superficially they sit together next to each other? Or is that miraculously, like the Radak quoting his father suggests, is that miraculous they actually become one unit again, which needs to almost be miraculous in the sense that, you know, since when has Jews ever been able to get along together? Which begs the question, and when did this happen? Did it happen, or is it yet to happen? The Da'at Mikra points out, as most of the Mefarshim point out, that yes, you know what, this has not yet occurred. This is referring to a time in the future when ultimately there will be a time when the north and the south, the 10 lost tribes and all of Klal Yisrael will be on the same page in one place. And it did not occur, and certainly did not occur even at Shivas Tzion, upon the building of the second base of Mikdash. It may be possible to use the Malbim's principle here. The Malbim has a principle which he uses in Haggai and Zechariah, and sometimes in Yeshayo, where he says that there was prophetic potential that it could have been, but perhaps that potential was lost and deferred to the future. Where maybe it could have been that there was the return of the 10 lost tribes if the second base of Mikdash had been built in the correct way, but that moment, that opportunity ultimately was lost. And of course, this is the Haftarah for Parashas of Vayigash, because this is the time when Vayigash Elav Yehuda, when Yehuda came towards Yosef, and there was trying to be reconciliation between the two parts of the family, which hopefully we will witness Bekorov B'Yomeinu. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.